Blog Talk Radio.
Can't muster a whole lot of either hooray, enthusiasm, or vitriol this week. It was just not, I don't know, I was not inspired one way or the other this week by the quality of film that we saw. This is Damn You Hollywood, I'm Robert Winfrey, and tonight we are reviewing Cars 3. The most recent entry into the lone franchise in the Pixar portfolio that is just a blatant cash grab. Just please give me money, give me money, give me money, give me money. And tonight we're going to be hashing out whether or not this is as bad as some of the other entries into this particular group, especially the second one, or if it finally, if it is a bit of a return to form for Pixar, if they can kind of bring some degree of artistry and emotional heft back into what is a extraordinarily silly franchise in many, many ways. So here with me, helping me sort this whole thing out, a man who has all the passion because I have none. That way the zero-sum balance, it's a zero-sum game, folks. Mark Radulich is here with me again. How you doing, Mark?
I'm just fine. We, my wife and I took the children to go see Cars 3. I liked it. My wife liked it. My daughter was entertained by it. My son couldn't give a fuck. If they weren't racing, he wasn't caring. He literally said to my wife partway through the movie, "Why do they have to talk so much? Why are they talking so much, Mommy? Mommy, I hate it when they talk." My son is showing some dangerous signs of growing up to be a complete meathead. Like, he's not going to be my movie-enjoying son. That's my daughter. But good old Jonas, only happy when they're racing.
Well, he's still very young. I mean, I assume that we all went at that age. If we were watching movies, we only were interested in the action, and the rest of it kind of went over our heads.
You know, my daughter, though, I started bringing her to the movies by herself when she was three. I brought her to go see The Nut Job, and we saw Inside Out together. And she didn't make it through the first showing of Frozen, but that wasn't her fault. We were on a cruise, and it was midnight. But she's always managed to. I've never had a problem with her sitting through the movies, whether she was bored. I mean, last year I took her to go see World of Warcraft, and she just curled up into a ball and went, "But." Which is fitting for that movie, I suppose. If you know,
generally,
no
yeah.
relationship to it. But she's never like I've never had to tell her to sit down. For God's sake, stay in your seat. because she was bored because there wasn't enough happening on screen. She did really well last year with a lot of the movies that we saw. You know, as you'll recall, we saw Alice in Wonderland and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles all on the same day, and she was fine with it. So, I don't know. We'll have to see as my son gets older if he gets any better at this. Or, look, not everybody is going to be a movie person, you know? That may just not be his thing.
Which is fair. All right. I'm a little You said your son was big into the Cars franchise, though, I seem to recall.
He likes cars. Yeah, he likes Hot Wheels. He likes to play with his little cars. He's watched the first movie. I don't know if he's how much of the second one he's seen.
Seen it all.
Okay, no, he has seen them both. Cars 2, I know it has a special place in your heart for how much you hate it. He's fine with it. He's watched it a bunch of times. I mean, I don't think he's watched either as many times as he's watched Moana.
Moana has The Rock. I mean, it's no contest.
You're welcome. But he's definitely seen both Cars movies, and he's been fine with them.
All right. Well, you're gonna have us moderately interested because, you know, kids. This is a kid friend. Pixar makes a lot of movies that are kid accessible, but really more for adults. And then you have a few of the entries that are very much the kid franchises. And Pixar is a kids franchise. Cars is a kids franchise. And always nice to get the perspective from the target audience, which I have no access to.
Well, we were in a theater full of children who were at camp. And, you know, look, I think in general it's very hard to get kids to shut up in a movie theater. If you're in a packed house full of kids, they're going to talk. That's just the way it is. And there's going to be a lot of shushing going on. However, I would say that most of the kids who we were in the theater with seem to enjoy themselves. I will tell you this as we get into the actual review of the movie. I might have been one of the only people laughing hysterically in some scenes.
Well, that happens to you and I quite frequently, I seem to recall.
That one of the reviewers didn't think there was a single laugh in the movie. We'll get to it when we get to that part of the review. But, we'll talk about it, but there were definitely scenes where I was in hysterics. I laughed pretty hard.
I don't think I ever got to laughing that hard. I imagine I smiled a time or two, but, I mean, look, I'm not a people person. Surprise, surprise, right? So anytime I go to a movie and it's full of, you know, parents with four kids or, you know, two families that join together to bring their, you know, seven children with, you know, three adults. I just want to die. Because I understand that kids are going to talk. I really do. And there are degrees to which, again, you can only be so annoyed with it. Otherwise, your worldview is simply irrational. But the ones who get up and kind of kick seats, you know, or start crying, I mean, if you teach a child to talk appropriately in a theater, I think everyone is just very grateful that you've done so. But when they use loud voices, I find it deeply, deeply grating. And guess what I had a lot of? Yeah. All right. I suppose that kind of covers the, you know, intro bits, unless you have anything that you wanted to talk about as far as expectation goes before I do my plot synopsis.
I think if we really loved and appreciated our audience, we'd get the fuck on with it.
So what you're saying is you have a lot of things you want to say about a different subject.
Head on with it, you nit.
All right, Cars 3. We pick up back in the Cars world. Lightning McQueen is no longer a secret agent. Because that was seriously just so stupid. Seriously, really, just the dumbest.
Mater is the Jack Sparrow of the Cars universe. He's funny in bits and best used sparingly.
I will not acquiesce to that because Larry the Cable Guy is an absolute waste of space, humanity, airtime, intellect, biomass.
He entertains a lot of people, and he does so, generally speaking, without having to go blue. There's nothing wrong with Larry the Cable Guy. He's just not your cup of tea.
No.
And his character,
there's nothing wrong
Toe
with
Mater,
some of the other guys who did the blue collar comedy tour.
Nothing wrong with any.
There's
of them.
A lot wrong with Larry the Cable Guy.
Why does there have to be something wrong with him when he's probably the most successful out of all of them? I think at one point he was making more money than Jeff Foxworthy. And, you know, here's the guy who's admitted on television, Larry the Cable Guy is an act. It's a character that he plays. It's just one of the many voices that he does. And as long as that entertains people and he's not hurting anybody, what's your fucking problem?
It's the wrong day to have this discussion.
Oh, no. Oh, come on. Lay down on the couch. What's wrong? Tell
no,
Dr.
No,
Radley.
No. Nothing's wrong. This is just the wrong day to try and have a discussion with me about the artistic or cultural merits of Get Her Done.
Jesus. Stop being a snot. Stop being so stuck up. You know, millions of people enjoy the man, and he's not doing anything wrong. It isn't like, you know, he's a rapper who's promoting gang violence. He tells funny, he tells funny lowbrow jokes to people who appreciate that sort of humor. What
I'm more I tend to think it's less about him telling jokes and more about him making funny noises.
Well, who
I mean,
cares?
I'm
as
just
long as he's not like promoting violence against people, and people are happy and entertained by him, which they are, or he would not have made any money. What the fuck? Who cares? Why pick on the man? Grant him his due. He has been very successful in his chosen career field.
And I never said he was.
Because he's connected with people across the country and, you know, and possibly the globe. I don't know how well Larry the Cable Guy does outside of the United States, but he is certainly connected with people in the United States.
About as well as Tyler Perry, if I had to throw a guess out there.
Okay, and at least he hasn't run for president. Give him his due and let him be. And I go back to my initial statement to round out this entire discussion. Toe Mater is the equivalent of Jack Sparrow, used well sparingly.
They fall within the same general category. I will acquiesce to that point. However, we could always use less Mater.
Ugh. Go on. With your plus enoughs and snotty.
What? I'm in a snobby mood. I told you, this is the wrong day to have that discussion with me.
Looks like I picked the wrong day to stop sniffing glue.
Well, to be honest, I wasn't planning on flying today, so I was pretty high on heroin when we taxied off the runway.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Seen a grown man? What's the other one about him, like, weeping quietly?
I don't know. But
see, we've already dovetailed
into
two things that are better than this movie, anyway.
Move on.
Anyway, McQueen is back racing, and he's generally winning. Life is good. He's got his friends on the race circuit, and I mean, this picks up. This would be the ending of your traditional Disney movie in this sense that, oh yeah, he's off, he's winning, he's happy. And we pick up as a vastly superior race car shows up and promptly smokes McQueen. I mean, just smokes him like it's nothing. More of these more appropriately designed, faster, better race cars show up, and they're forcing out the old generation of models. And McQueen just doesn't know when to say when. I'm going to refer to him as BJ Penn for the rest of this plot synopsis for exactly that reason. No, seriously, BJ Penn's fighting on Sunday.
Oh, is he? Ugh.
At featherweight, again.
Why? You know, don't answer that. Just
who the hell knows?
Does he owe the mob money? Jesus Christ. All right, let's just get on with this.
Anyway, jokes aside, he's trying to hang on, and he's getting beaten by these better race cars. And racing's been his whole life. He can't let go. Gets into a big wreck. And he has to try and he's trying to piece himself back together. After the fact, his sponsors have sold their company to a billionaire voiced by Nathan Fillion, who's probably the highlight of this movie, as he is in so many things. Although I have a major gripe with the character decision they made with him. A major. And they've sold to him. He's developed a state-of-the-art racing facility. He's a fan of racing, a fan of McQueen's. He wants to promote his comeback story. And he's going to make a lot of money off of it. McQueen's going to get to keep racing. Unfortunately, McQueen is... He doesn't really have it anymore. They hook him up with a personal trainer, Cruz something.
Ramirez.
Cruz Ramirez, yes, thank you. Who is trying to get him back in shape, and he doesn't want the new age stuff. He doesn't want to loosen up his joints. He doesn't want to, you know, go slow. He wants to jump into this new fancy simulator and prove he's still got it. And because he doesn't want to do the work the way his body demands, he jumps into the simulator. It goes poorly. Sterling sees his lack of progress.
You have crashed. You have crashed. I laughed my ass off at that.
Yeah, that wasn't too bad. Sterling sees this lack of progress and decides, no, if he goes out there with, you know, my name and my sponsorships, and he does this, I'm going to be a laughingstock. I'm not going to get a return on my investment. But he's still a legend with a you know, huge fan base. How about we retire him and we use him as a spokesperson? Then we all make money. He makes money being a spokesperson. I make money selling products. He rides off into the sunset. Everybody wins. But McQueen won't have it. He's got more in him, you see. He doesn't know when to say when. So they make a bet for a single race that if McQueen wins, he gets to decide when he wants to be done rather than told, which is his big fear. Going back to his relationship with Paul Newman's character in the first Cars.
Doc Hudson.
Yes, I know his. I know the character's name. I just don't care.
Oh, goodness gracious.
The Hudson Hornet, you see. See the first Cars if you want that story.
I'm gonna demand that you put effort into this, okay, sir? I know what everyone's really waiting for. Next week, our review of Transformers, the main event of the summer, ladies and gentlemen. It's not getting any better than next week. Robert and Mark, round two, screaming and yelling at each other. I know, Robert Winfrey, that's what you're saving yourself for, but that's still a week away, and we still have a review that demands our attention. So buck up, little camper. Suicide is never the answer.
That's fundamentally untrue, but okay.
You know what I mean.
Anyway, he's dealing a lot with the elements of his character in this movie are still dealing with the loss of Doc because, again, Paul Newman died. So you can't make more movies featuring him. And Doc always regretted that he got into a wreck and was told, no, you can't race anymore, when he felt he still had, you know, something to give. There was still stuff in the basement, you see. If I could borrow a Rocky phrase. So he's kind of dealing with that. He and Cruz, so after this wager's made, he gets to train how he wants. He and Cruz do some training, which doesn't really involve getting McQueen into tip-top shape so much as kind of inadvertently training Cruz under these different conditions. Now, driving on a beach, they wind up in a demolition derby that she wins, and McQueen gets all bitchy because he's Owen Wilson. He can't quite handle that this isn't going the way he wants it to. Retirement staring him in the face, And, you know, the fact that he just can't keep doing this forever, and he really wants it to go the other way, and nothing's working. He's wasting more of his time essentially training her than training himself. Lost for advice, he goes to the sage of this series, Larry the Cable Guy, who advises him to find the man who trained Doc. He reconnects with Cruz on the way there because he feels badly about being a dick, as you should. No one should enjoy that. They find the character of Smokey, played by Chris Cooper. He and Cruz train some more, utilizing, you see, the old-timey methods. They're clearly superior to what technology can provide us. We've learned this lesson many times over throughout film. Rocky trains on a farm in Russia while Drago gets cutting-edge training. Rocky wins. The Mighty Ducks flounder until a tough inner-city kid sets them straight, because that's clearly more valuable than international hockey experience. I could go on and on. This lesson has been repeated ad nauseum, not a lesson, it's more of a fallacy, but they feeling better. The key moment here is actually the last kind of bit of training they do when McQueen fails to beat Cruz. They show up for the race. He starts it off. Halfway through, he abandons it so that Cruz can take over for him, utilizing the same number, which is all you need, apparently. Doesn't matter if you're a different driver or a different car. If you got the same number, you're good to go. What a horrible, horrible oversight in the codification of your rules, right? I mean, just horrible oversight.
Look, I'll give you that. When they were like, well, all it says is the number has to be in there, I'm just like, so essentially, no one's thought of just cheating by setting up a relay race team of other cars that aren't, you know. Like, well, you said. So
I mean,
all you have to do is put the number in there. I'd have like 10 cars lined up.
I mean, at that point, why don't they all just share the same number? That way, no matter what, no matter who wins, the same number wins.
Yeah.
Everybody wins. Sorry, I just turned into a communist. I apologize.
I understand it was a way to set up Cruz getting in there and paying off that arc of the story. But yeah, it was one of those where, like, if it's a kid's movie, so we're gonna allow it without too much more discussion. But it's one of those where if you think about it for too long, you're just like, hey, wait a minute, what the fuck is this? Kind of a moment.
In this case, too long being about 4 consecutive seconds. Anyway, Cruz comes back in, utilizing again the training she received and Lightning taking over as the crew chief. She wins the race. She shuts down the jackass who'd been winning everything. All is happy. She winds up with a different team because for some reason at the 11th hour they turn Sterling into a jackass, which was so unnecessary. I mean, really, so unnecessary.
Uh-huh. So what happens next, Robert?
She winds up with a different team. McQueen decides he wants to keep racing even though he's past his prime, while also kind of grooming Cruz. They have an exhibition race back in Radiator Springs and roll credits in a similar fashion to the Rocky and Apollo punch-off at the end of Rocky 3.
Three. You're right. No, I apologize. You're right. It's three. Got my Rocky
And again. Roll credits. Moving on, probably to have another sequel in 5 years, because there's no narrative closure necessarily in this particular instance. There's plenty of room to do another one, and the evil mouse loves money. So, again, I imagine in the next
All hail the Mouse King of Summer. All hail the Mouse King of Summer.
In all seriousness, if there's not another major Disney or Pixar franchise in the next 3 to 4 years that taps into the, you know, male child demographic, kind of the way Cars has, we'll probably get a Cars 4.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. So what did I think of this movie? Well, as I said before, there were definitely parts that I laughed at. I was entertained by it. My wife and I both said the same thing. We liked the overall theme of the movie, you know, the concept of getting older. It definitely had that Rocky feel to it, which is funny because my wife really raved about this movie. She just thought it was the cat's pajamas. Has walked into a room where I was watching one of the Rocky movies and thought, this is the world's stupidest movie. Most recently, and I have to make this comparison. If of all the Rocky movies, it mostly apes Rocky Balboa, which the story of that is he is already old and he's past his prime and he's going to get in the ring one more time. And everyone said the joke, and there's no way he can truly beat the younger, more experienced champion. You know, how can Rocky at his age, broken down as he is, get back in the ring and fight the youthful champion? But he does. And the movie sort of revolves around that and, you know, and just moving on with your life. When certain curveballs affect you and whatnot or are thrown your way. And there's a speech in Rocky Balboa. I am going somewhere with this. There's a speech in Rocky Balboa where his son comes to him and says, you know, it hasn't always been easy being your son. You suck up a lot of spotlight. I feel like I can't live up to you and I'm always living in your shadow. And I was just starting to find my own way. And then you decide you're going to come out of retirement and go back to fighting, and I feel like I can't get away from you. And Rocky says, quit whining, you stupid bitch. This, you know, life knocks you down. You get back up again. That's how winning is done. And I'm watching this movie, and I have tears in my eyes because, yes, that's how I feel. I connect with that, Rocky. Thank you. Thank you for putting to words my thoughts. I turn to my wife, who's like, why are you crying? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. This movie is so stupid.
I almost feel like it's got to be a male thing, you know? Like, the Rocky's articulation there is aimed at guys.
That's fine. And, yes, there is no that's how winning's done in Cars 3 that I could recall. But the theme of all of that is there. All of what's in Rocky 5 is in Cars 3. And she's like, Cars 3 is wonderful. It's just fantastic. I loved it. And I didn't say anything to her at the time. Of course, now she can hear me yelling about it. Hi, Melissa. Oh, she's not listening at all. Fantastic. Back to not understanding how my wife could love Cars 3 and hate Rocky Balboa when they're the same fucking movie. In any case, thematically, I should say. But getting back to Cars 3 specifically, I did enjoy that theme of getting older and trying to find a way of living with yourself when you can't do the thing you love anymore. It's passing you by. My daughter especially connected with the Cruz Ramirez story, which we'll get into it when we get into the reviews. A lot of people thought was cynical and just a way to sell, you know, cars to girls, which maybe, but you can sell cars to girls in a shitty way, or you can sell it to them with a good story. I thought they sold it to him with a good story. Let me repeat my Larry the Cable Guy rant. Just because you're making money and selling to people doesn't necessarily make what you're doing bad. It may not be your cup of tea, but it isn't inherently bad. And that concept annoys the shit out of me. People think like, oh, well, you know, it's just a cynical attempt to sell cars to girls. Okay, but if it was a bad story, that would be true, but it's not a bad story. I actually thought the way they handled the Cruz Ramirez subplot, I thought they handled it very well. I thought, you know, as a character, I thought they fleshed her out. I thought they gave her a good backstory. And I thought, even though her way of getting into the race at the end was cockamamie, I just got over it. Cause I'm like, well, they had to pay this off somehow. And they did. You know, I was kind of glad they acknowledged that, you know what, he doesn't have to win the race. He doesn't have to be the glory hound. He can get outside of himself and he can share this moment and push somebody else up. You know, making Lightning a real hero, more so in this movie than in the first one. I'm not acknowledging the second one, and apparently neither is Disney. More on that in just a minute.
Nor should they.
The I think one of the scenes where I was cracking up just hysterically was the demolition derby. There were that whole sequence I thought was hysterical, and I really, really enjoyed it. I might have been the only one laughing in the theater out loud. there were other one-liners and bits and things happening in the movie that made me laugh. And, you know, overall, it was the whole movie is about 109 minutes. And I, 41-year-old man, was entertained for the entire 41 minutes. I didn't think it dragged at all. I thought it told a good story. I thought there were a lot of good voice performances. I really don't have any major problems with it. As far as craft criticism, I'll tell you what, I give the movie a lot of praise. At times when it was when the narrative slowed down so that you could actually take in the scenery and settings of this animated feature, I thought it was on par with a movie that we both thought visually was stunning, you know, The Good Dinosaur. I thought it was at that level, you know? I mean, we talked about movies in the past, The Good Dinosaur actually being one of them, that were in development hell, and I don't think there was much in the way of development hell on this one, and it showed. I didn't think it was the narrative was constipated at all. I thought it all flowed very well. I thought it looked great. I thought it sounded great. I don't know. I mean, without totally focusing on Cruz Ramirez, I think we're done with Lightning McQueen. I don't know if there's any more of his story left, you know, worth telling. But, you know, we'll see. I thought the same thing about the entire Toy Story cast, and there's going to be a Toy Story 4, so fuck me, I don't know.
I'm so annoyed by that. Just I can't tell you.
Me too. There are a few times I get this aggravated with either Pixar or Disney, and that's one of them. But like I said, I mean,
and this on the heels of, you know, Daniel Day Lewis retiring, it's just like,
damn you, Hollywood. I mean, I'm hard pressed to find a lot of things to complain about. I think maybe my only minor quibble, if I had to think of something, is there's the old Radiator Springs cast outside of Mater, who they cut to in a couple of occasions, and I don't know, I didn't feel like they really needed to be there. You know, does Sally really need to be in this? I don't think
added
any.
I mean, she's McQueen's wife, girlfriend, or whatever, so I'm okay with her being in there, but
I don't think she added all that much to the movie outside of the beginning. You know, getting him out of the garage, and then after that, I didn't think we needed her anymore. But she shows up at the end for some weird reason.
I'm okay with her showing up at the end. I mean, again, it's stupid, but you have an established relationship between the characters.
Again, this is what I mean, like, That's the best I can come up with for a quibble, because the rest of it, I mean, is it the most perfect movie ever? No, but I don't have but I thought they did a really great job of putting together the story and all the other elements of the craft. I thought were where they should be. So overall, I would give it an A. It's a great movie. You know, it's not Citizen Kane by any stretch of the imagination, but if you're looking for a movie to take your kids to that isn't shit, this qualifies.
Yeah, again, as far as craft goes, I've only got a couple of things. I mean, again, the thing with, we can substitute in any number of people, number of cars. And you're like, no, you're being stupid. And really, there's a much better way to frame that narrative in the sense that you could just say each car is allowed one substitute in case of, you know, injury. And have them, you know, fake a
sprain
or something.
Yeah, but that's not how NASCAR works. This is supposed to be NASCAR, and NASCAR doesn't allow for relay teams. Last time I checked.
No, again, but my point in this instance being that given the minor alterations they've made, you could easily say, you know, each car gets an understudy, for want of a better phrase. Something goes wrong, you can replace them with another car. And that not only makes a little bit more sense, it also, you know, again, you achieve the same goal without
okay,
the same narrative stupidity.
I'm going to stop you there. No, see, here's why I'm going to allow for narrative stupidity and think say you're overthinking this. If they had established in the beginning this rule of yours, it then telegraphs. Sorry, it telegraphs an ending where you know they're going to substitute. I knew at some point she was going to race and he was going to end up being her crew chief. I didn't think it was going to be midway through a race he started. I thought he either wouldn't start the race or there would be another race and, you know, that they would show him, you know, putting her in the race at the very end of the movie. But as much as I saw that coming, I didn't think they'd do it mid-race. That kind of took me by surprise.
Well, sure, it's stupid.
But that's the thing. I think you don't want to telegraph your big surprise. For a lot of people in the audience who don't think about these things very hard, I think that comes as a legitimate, like, wow moment. And you don't want to take that out of the movie by telegraphing it.
I mean, you don't even have to telegraph it. You don't even have to establish the rule. You can just have, you know, Chris Cooper deliver that same line, but instead of you just need the number, it's now sure you can tag out once.
Okay, that would have been a better way to handle it then. I'll give you that. If you're really insisting on and saying, hey, the number thing is dumb, is there a better way to do this? You can actually say, well, the rules say you can have an understudy or, you know, you can have an undercar.
Substitute,
you can have a
whatever.
Substitute. You can have a substitute if things go, if under certain circumstances. All right, fine. If they had established that at the beginning, I think that would have sucked.
No, but again, at the beginning, they could have also established that, no, you only need the number. I mean, it's all about dropping this particular bombshell, which is fine. Just don't make it so stupid. Yeah.
I think we're quibbling over a non-entity detail.
Okay. I agree with you about the backgrounds. That travel montage when they go from wherever they were, like West Coast to East Coast,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely beautifully rendered. Just absolutely gorgeous. I mean, the characters, you know, the cars actually look out of place. That's how realistic some of the backgrounds look. Which is fine. That's not a complaint necessarily. I got to say this because I really thought the decision to, again, at the 11th hour, at the final race, turn the character of Sterling into a secondary villain was so unnecessary.
It provided tension, you know, at the end. I didn't have a problem with it.
If you'd established him earlier as kind of a smarmy guy, you know, if he's in the beginning, you know, and you can tell this to the audience without telling it to the individual characters, he's established as, you know, caring, not really caring about, you know, all of this. He just wants to make money.
That wasn't apparent.
Not with all the stuff he did. I mean, again, he is profit-driven, sure. That's not inherently evil. I mean, again, the way he talks and the way he presents himself, absent other evidence, suggests that he just is a lifelong fan of this sport and sees an opportunity to now make money.
Which doesn't make
him a villain.
I got the impression that he was smarmy enough, and I think, you know, the insistence that, you know, I don't know, I don't want him to be mustache twirly, and I don't want him to be like Skeletor evil. I think doing things like insisting Lightning McQueen retire and sell mud flaps after, you know, the simulator incident, I thought was shitty enough. I there's something else that he does early on. I don't know. Like, I guess I was okay with the subtle nods to being a shitty capitalist without him going overboard. Maybe that's just the difference between you and me, which is a personal thing.
And it's entirely possible that, you know, yeah, other people look at this and go, no, are you kidding? Look at all these setups. He wants Lightning McQueen to retire. Well, the guy was in a serious wreck and isn't progressing with his training. Maybe he just doesn't want him to get hurt. You know, maybe he's, you know, able to.
Yeah.
I mean, my biggest gripe with this seems to be that we keep treading dangerously close to the narrative that because I want to make money on my, you know, financial investment, I am, that alone makes me a terrible, that's enough of a qualifier to be a terrible person. And and apparently it's enough of a cue to the majority of moviegoers that, no, I happen to, you know, care about my financial future and my, you know, corporation. Oh, wait, they're clearly setting up a heel turn. Like, those two points are not connected.
I haven't looked very closely. Please let there be references to Trump and the negative reviews for Cars 3. I am begging you.
I will throw something.
Someone please call Cars 3 Trumpy.
Anti-Trump in this case would be more accurate, which is even dumber because bear in mind, he sells the sponsorship deal for McQueen to a Texas billionaire at the end of the film.
But see, he's the good guy and wants to help. See, that's the difference.
Again, it came too far out of left field for me.
Okay.
Not just, you know, him planning for McQueen's failure is one thing. All right, having a contingency plan is valid. But then he just pointlessly beats up on, you know, Cruz. And I mean, pointlessly. And this is, I suppose this is kind of what kills it.
He's supporting the narrative that nobody saw her as a racer, including herself. That
I
is the whole purpose.
That and again, narratively, I understand. I understand that prior to the triumphant comeback, you need to reinforce the hurdle you're trying to overcome. I'm just a little surprised that you took this character who's essentially ambivalent, and then right at the end, when his trainer is watching him. I mean, this is the rough equivalent of Dana White going over to Greg Jackson in the middle of a fight and going, hey, don't you have another fighter to get ready for the main event? How dare you be out here and corner someone you've trained? That's what this felt like to me. It just felt so stupid. Now, I've spent, you know, weeks and months getting this guy in shape. You're damn right I'm going to sit here and watch the race. Again, I understand the intended emotional impact. I question the execution. That's all.
Okay.
Okay. Was there anything else that I had here? No, not really. I mean, this is one of those movies that, again, minor things aside, because what Mark and I talked about that we didn't like, it's minor. It's extremely minor.
One of us should say it. After Cars 2, which was an utter disaster, I really thought this was a return to form. I want to say, what's his face there? Larry the Cable Guy, I think, has said in one article, they are not acknowledging Cars 2. I think everyone's safe with there being a Cars 1 and Cars 3 profit, and Cars 2 never happened. That is, it's an Elseworld tale. It's imaginary. They're just like, it's not canon anymore. Go ahead and get your final thoughts, and I'm gonna go and screen this call.
All right. Mark and I have talked about Cars 2 at times, and I think I referred to it as a soulless cash grab. This is not Cars 2. This is not that bad. There's character arcs to be had. Again, McQueen has a bit of one. Cruz has one.
I scared them off.
Trolling doesn't work in the screening booth.
Well, it's not true. They could absolutely be perfectly fine in the screening booth, and they come on and be like, when are you two going to blow each other? Oh, boy. Anyway, you ready to talk about the money?
Hang on. I have. Let me wrap up, and then, yeah. Again, this is better than Cars 2. It's more on par with Cars 1, which is in and of itself not... It's of the lesser films in the Pixar pantheon, but some of that is just because of how good some of Pixar's films are. This, again, minor complaints aside, I found it utterly unspectacular, completely forgettable, but made with, you know, superb competence and confidence. The gripes are minor.
Okay.
It's a well-made movie. I don't think I'd go A, but solid B, B plus, easy.
Well, I don't have anything to, like, my biggest criticism was that I thought some of the Radiator Springs characters didn't need to be in the finale. I'm honestly grasping at straws for something negative to say. I could, you know, I not that I think, like I said, that this was like a perfect feature. They didn't do anything wrong, you know.
Yeah.
But it's also not really intended for us. This is, the Cars franchise is one of the rare Pixar films that I think is almost exclusively made for kids and not adults. Whereas like Monsters University, not Monsters University. Ugh, God, less said about that, the better. Monsters Incorporated, Toy Story, Finding Nemo, Up, for fuck's sake. I don't know who the fuck that movie was made for besides adults. Wall-E, I think, Ratatouille, I think a lot of these movies were made with adults in mind, but obviously have a kid element to them because they're animated features, where Cars was, you know, Cars tends to swing more towards, we're making this for kids, but we're not making it dumb so that the adults aren't into it. And I honestly think they thought they were, don't start screaming at me that it was a cash grab, it's a cookbook, I got it. But I'm making the argument that I think even with Cars 2, there was some degree of, well, the adults will think Larry the Cable Guy is funny. His stand-up is funny. Adults sell out his stand-up shows. If we focus on Larry the Cable Guy, we'll make the kids laugh, we'll make the adults laugh, it'll be fine. And they just struck out.
Horribly, horribly miscalculated.
Yes. And I would not argue otherwise, but I think that was the intention. But yeah, I think Cars 3, of all of the Pixar features, tends to swing most towards it being a kids feature, and it has less about the adult on the mind than many of their other heavy successes.
Yeah, I think I said that at the beginning, and yeah. It's a perfectly fine movie. I have no complaints about its inevitable success, unlike Cars 2, which made me want to put my head through a wall.
All right. Speaking of successes, here come the money.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money.
All right, on a budget of $175 million, it's currently made about $80,494,000 and change. It did fine. It's opening weekend. With a budget of $175 million, it's got to make, you know, north of $400 million for it to be a success. I'm sure it will. I'm sure it gets into the 5-6 category. The only thing really standing in its way is it's got some stiff competition just among kids over the next couple of weeks. Taking out Transformers for just a moment, it's got Despicable Me, and then right behind that is Spider-Man. So it's got some fairly heavy competition in the animated / kids department because, you know, while Spider-Man is a Marvel movie, it's going to have a heavy, heavy kids audience. Spider-Man is probably the number one hero among little kids, you know, with his flashy costume and all. So we'll see. But I don't think this will
be
a financial flop. I don't think this will be a financial flop. I think Cars 3, while not as successful as Zootopia or Frozen or, you know, Toy Story 3, I think it settles in about, you know, midway of 500,000-600,000, and I think that's fine. It doesn't really matter. It's going to sell a ridiculous amount of toys. it's going to more than make up for its production cost in toy sales. So, yay for Cars 3. As far as where we stand with the rest of the world, worldwide box office right now, Wonder Woman is climbing up the ranks. It's currently sitting at number 6. I have to say, I was really down on Pirates of the Caribbean. I didn't think it was going to do financially as well as, you know, at once we talked about it, once it had come out, I thought, it's probably going to settle in around $500 million. It's at $650 million. It's the number 4 movie in the world behind Guardians, Fate of the Furious, and Beauty and the Beast.
So overseas far, returns, baby.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's,
yeah, that's the thing about that one. I think something like 60 to 70% of its gross is from overseas rather than domestic as far as the United States goes.
Yep. We didn't review it because it sucked. But The Mummy, now, they're calling The Mummy a bomb. It had a $125 million production budget. Needs to make more than – now just to double its budget, as we do, it needs to make more than $250 million. Though I'm reading articles that say anything less than $400 million is an unmitigated disaster. It's currently at $295 million. So, you know, critically, yeah, it sucks. It's been panned, so not nearly as it's still ahead of Transformers currently, but that's a story for another day. It didn't
specifically
do shit in
seven
the US,
days
from
now.
It didn't do shit domestically. Domestically, it's at $58 million, but foreign receipts are currently standing at $236 million. So, The Mummy may have some legs. It may not be the big
Tom
financial
Cruise
disaster.
Tom Cruise says international appeal. I imagine a lot of them don't know about Scientology.
It's currently number 15 in the world, just behind the Lego Movie, Resident Evil, and The Great Wall. So we'll see. You know, it's got to get past $350 million to get into the top 10 right now. As I said, our top 10 currently looks like this. Beauty and the Beast, Fate of the Furious, Guardians, currently at $845 million. If that makes it to a billion, I don't know. You know, it may just eke out getting to $1 billion. We'll have to see.
If it does, it will be with a whimper rather than a bang.
That's what I'm saying. It's gonna, you know, sort of panting over the finish line. Pirates of the Caribbean has blown past Logan at $652 million. Again, hooray for Chinaman and overseas sales. Logan, I thought it was going to settle in around $500 million. It's actually settling in around $600 million. Wonder Woman is cranking in those receipts, currently standing at $578 million. And I'll tell you, it's split right down the middle here. Domestic tallies is $279 million, and its foreign receipts are $298 million. So domestically, Wonder Woman actually stands at the number 3 movie in America behind Guardians and Beauty and the Beast. We love Wonder Woman here in the United States. We also love comic book movies and Disney. So that's where we are right now. Let me go back to worldwide receipts here. After Wonder Woman is Kong Skull Island, a movie I don't think anybody thought was going to end up staying in the top 10 all year. And then Robert's favorite movie of the year, The Boss Baby, at number 8.
Gosh,
our
shut up.
Our Trumpiest movie of the year, 50 Shades Darker, and then Your Name. Finally, XXX, The Return of Xander Cage is out of the top 10. I can stop complaining about that.
You bet you won't.
Weekend box office receipts. Cars was your number 1 movie in America. It finally bested Wonder Woman. It dropped from number 1 to number 2. The Tupac movie, All Eyes on Me, debuted at number 3. The Mummy slid from 2 to 4. your Shocky movie, 47 Meters Down, debuted at number 5. Pirates fell from 4 to 6. Rough Night, which is the comedy from Sony, debuted at number 7. Poor Sony. So Sony's having a hell of a year. Their number
at
one movie
point,
right now.
At this point, I have to believe they've brought it on themselves. There's only so much bad luck that I believe will exist in this circumstance. They are like actively sabotaging themselves.
Well, you got to look at like their. I'm looking at it by studio right now. Their number one movie so far came out last year. It was Passengers, which sucked, by the way. Their number two, their number one movie of this year so far is The Smurfs: Lost Village. Then Underworld: Blood Wars. Then Life. Then Resident Evil: The Final Chapter. Rough Night just came out, so it'd be hard to really make.
Well, here's a
right
thought.
Rough...
Just an outside thought to the people at Sony. If you want to make more money in the movie business, try making better movies. Just
well,
a thought.
Next year, their big heavy hitter comes out in October. It's Venom. That's the one they're betting all the cookies on.
That's gonna fail so hard. Which is sad because I love Tom Hardy, but. I can't trust Sony as a production studio at this point to tie their own shoes, much less release a good movie.
Captain Underpants fell from number 3 to number 8, Guardians number 5 to 9, and It Comes at Night is your number 10 movie. It fell from number 6. Baywatch, by the way, if you're tracking that, it fell from 7 to 12. It is out of the top 10, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, poor Baywatch. All right.
I feel bad for it. It was terrible.
Just for shits and giggles, Alien Covenant, it made more than double its budget, but not by much. It's currently sitting at 213. That's got to be a miss for Fox. Fox has to look at Alien Covenant and financially say, it's the shits. We need to figure out what people want out of our next movie here, because – this didn't do the numbers it should have.
No, they were really banking on that one being a much bigger success. And yeah, it flopped pretty hard. I mean, really, you can only raise people's expectations so much with regards to titles and whatnot. As far as, you know, oh, it's an alien movie. Well, okay, I'll go see an alien movie. Well, in execution, not quite so much. And then have them be, you know, whiny about it. I mean, we talked about this for an hour when we viewed the movie.
Right. All right, that's all I got for money. So are you – oh, hang on. All right, we're going to give the – I'm just going to go in blind here. You ready? I'm going to do a blind call. All right, area code 636. You are on Damn You Hollywood with Mark and Robert. How can we help you? Hello, area code 636. All right, we'll just go ahead and put you back on mute.
I'm hanging
now,
up.
Robert, are you ready?
I'm in a mood. I just hung up.
Whatever. Go ahead and are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready?
No, God! No, God! Please, no! 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 No!
All right. I want to talk about this first one I'm going to read because, again, it's not up to the reviewer to decide what a movie should be about. If a movie – if someone decides to make a movie and they tell a good story, that should be what you're reviewing. Your review shouldn't be, well, they didn't make the movie I think they should make. So I immediately want to kick this person square in the nuts. Keith Watson of Slant Magazine. Cars 3 doesn't seem to care about defining the contours of his universe or exploring the possibilities of an all-car world.
That's not a complaint. That's not a criticism. That's No, they didn't go into, you know, what the government structure is like or how they how transatlantic travel.
Or do cars make babies? Do they make baby cars? I mean, look, Screen Junkies already did this, okay? They handled it in a very funny way on both their Honest trailer and the latest edition of Movie Fight. And you know what I got out of both situations? It's fun to think about, but that's not what these movies are, and I don't need to know what the greater Cars universe is like or how this universe works. These are character pieces. It's about an athlete dealing in the first movie not being a selfish fucktard, and in the third movie not, you know, dealing with age and retirement and what to do with oneself when your basketball career is over, Michael Jordan. Pardon me. I who cares how this universe works? Jesus, go on. Sorry.
No, that's not relevant to the film. I mean, at no point do they even hint at the wider functionality of the world. If they talked about it even passingly or referenced it or anything like that, then okay, the expansion is required. But they just drop this, you know, this world on us and then operate within it. And that's fine. Go along for the ride. If they don't feel compelled to explain the minutiae of civic ordinances or, you know, the demographics of various sports, then so be it.
They didn't do that with Toy Story either. All you needed to know about toys were that they would go dead if a human being walked in the room. That's
well, they
it.
Chose
That's
to go dead. They didn't have to.
Oh, yes. They operated
but, you know,
as
toys. Your
toys
were alive. That's it. I wonder how toys first came to life. I wonder what the toys in the White House do. I wonder by what set of rules they govern this bit of logic that no humans can't know about us. I wonder what happens when toys. Come on.
Jared Mubarak of the film stage, the worst Pixar to date.
Oh, that's just untrue.
Wow.
Did you not see Cars 2?
Or The Good Dinosaur?
What's the other one? I have another one that I bring up when this discussion comes up that nobody seems to agree with me on. Hang on.
I don't know. I mean,
you
want me to pull up
require,
a list of Pixar movies?
I will find a list of Pixar films and I will come back. But yeah, no, it's Pixar films. Here we go. I mean, you brought up Monsters University earlier, so we can bring that up again.
That's certainly at the bottom of the chain. You know, The Good Dinosaur, Cars 2, Monsters University, all three of these could easily battle it out for worst Pixar movie. Cars 3 doesn't even come close to any of those.
No, much as I liked Brave, I think it would fall into that conversation.
I know a lot of people don't like Brave, but I didn't think it was a bad movie necessarily. Oh, well,
it isn't. Again, it fell short of expectations, and it showed a lot of the wear and tear related to the development hell it kind of went through. But again, this is not the worst Pixar movie. I mean, again, there's Cars 2. Really, that's the end of the discussion here. Cars 2. If you need
right,
further
Katie
proof,
Walsh.
Yeah, we can debate Monsters University and The Good Dinosaur and just leave that caller there if that comes up again.
Okay. Katie Walsh, yep, came up again. But at this point, I think they're just happy listening to the
show.
Yeah, if not, hit me here. I'll open up my Twitter. I'm Mark Rattledge on Twitter. If you are desperate to get on this show, just tweet me and explain to me what it is you want and actually talk when I unmute you. Okay. Katie Walsh of the Tribune News Service, top critic. The female empowerment subplot feels hollow because it's clearly just more brand extension. Little girls can be consumer of toy cars too, than any sort of story development within the heartfelt meaning. Yeah, this is what I mean before when I said, if you tell a terrible story just to sell toys, I'll criticize you for it. But when the story is solid, shut the fuck up.
Here's the other thing about this, and I don't know. Look, take the following with as much salt as you feel necessary coming from a 31-year-old white guy living in Utah, okay? I didn't feel this was a female empowerment story because it was just about a – it's about an athlete who never got their chance because they had self-confidence issues. Now, maybe this is, again, white male privilege, but who cares if it's a male or female car?
Yeah,
I mean, really.
Her gender was indicative of anything.
I know.
It was, I think
that's
you're
my point. If
you're
that's a male
right. just
car
about an
instead of a female, it's just as strong a story. There's no inherent benefit or detracture either way. It's just a relatively well-told instance of someone finding their passion and finally being able to succeed. It's not about female empowerment. This isn't Thelma and Louise.
Or Wonder Woman.
Which isn't really about that either, but I mean, if
well,
you listen to the negative
taken...
reviews for that movie, it didn't go far enough attacking the patriarchy. Yeah, sure, jackass.
All right, moving on. William Bibbiani of Crave Online, I love to read his stuff is always great, tells a story that only middle-aged adults staring down the barrel of retirement can fully appreciate, but tells it in such a way that only the littlest of kids could possibly be entertained. Ouch.
See, I'm not sure the second half of that is accurate. I mean, the first half, yeah, look, small children who just want to see Lightning McQueen go fast, especially in a medium where, I mean, it's easier to get the story across visually of an older character who looks older struggling to keep up with younger characters. The fact that Lightning McQueen looks and acts the same way in this movie as he does in all the others, it might be a little bit harder to completely tell the story to these kids that, no, he's not fast anymore. And they get around to that, but I understand that it might be a little bit more difficult to index that for them. But I don't think it's told in such a way that only, you know, the paint eaters of the world can really enjoy it.
All right. Moving on here in the world. Roger Moore of Movie Nation surpasses Monsters University to become the worst Pixar movie ever. Not a laugh in it. Okay.
Okay.
Are you dead inside, sir?
Well, hang on. I didn't laugh at this, but then again, I am kind of dead inside, so maybe that doesn't help my case. Again, here's my real point. Cars 2. All right? Have none of the people making this claim actually seen Cars 2? Because that's all I can arrive at.
All right. Our very own Joel Morgenstern, Man Who Yells at Cloud, from the Wall Street Journal. Once again, our cranky old man. We love to read his stuff here. Top critic. Cars 3 feels like the series at the end of the road is running on fumes of nostalgia for its earliest self.
I mean, no. Just no. Like, so much of this is just wrong. I mean, okay, guys, this is why tenure is such a dubious standard to uphold, okay? Because you get somebody like this. Well, Joel,
we say it every week,
but
it bears repeating.
Job.
Joe Morgan
really
Stern,
like
please retire.
I got tenure.
Oh, Joe. I don't know why they send you to go see Cars 3 anyway.
It yearns for the nostalgia of its past self. No, it just references past material. I mean, really, does...
All right.
Like... That's just so asinine. Oh, The Hobbit. Boy, that one sure is yearning for the past glory of the franchise.
Eric D. Snyder of ericdsnyder.com. And what I really want you to say here, Robert, is... is, are you proud of that line, sir? This should get the patented Robert Winfrey, are you proud of that line? A boring existential drama about an aging racer's fear of obsolescence. Whee! Vroom! I'm not even kidding. That's in there. Whee! Vroom! At the end of that sentence.
Yeah, again, this is why you're self-employed, all right? This is why the only work reviewing a movie you can reviewing films you can get is by a website that you run. All right? Look, the physical decline, the move towards retirement, I question whether or not in this instance it actually goes so far as to be existential. There's no question necessarily of McQueen's value or who he is as an individual outside of racing. This is just what he wants to do. And he doesn't like being told, no, you can't do it anymore. He doesn't get into the depths that you see explored in more serious dramas about the same subject of, my life is racing. If I'm not a racer, I'm nothing. That never comes up. He just doesn't want to stop. That's not at all the same thing. And the bit about obsolescence is inaccurate as well. He's not obsolete. He's just maybe this speaks to the current mindset of technophiles and engineers. He's just one generation back. That's not obsolete at all. It's just no longer cutting edge. The two are not related. So you exacerbate elements of a narrative in order to try and service what you want to say about the movie, and then complement it with onomatopoeia. Good job. Vroom wee.
Fred,
a much more accurate ending to that particular sentence would be crash burn.
Fred Topel of Nerd Report. I would love to say one of these movies is the fastest, most furious Pixar movie, but they can't even give me that. It's right there. You fucking hack. You hack nonsense piece of shit. Sorry, this is supposed to be your gimmick. Go ahead.
No, by all means.
Fucking hack. The fast and the furious. Shut the fuck up.
Just review the movie,
douche.
A, just review the movie. B, if you want to make a comparison to another film or even a film franchise, since that's what we're doing here, Mark, what franchise did we reference when talking about this film?
The Rocky franchise.
Thank you. Much more accurate. No, but it's Cars, so it must be like Fast and the Furious. Yeah, there's an outlaw. There's an undercover cop who's not really undercover. No, wait, he's a surfer. No, wait, sorry, I'm confusing Fast and the Furious with Point Break because they're the same movie. And The Rock will show up eventually to save the floundering franchise, and then everything goes off the rails, but there's more explosions, so more people see it. No, you. Again, there's an apt comparison right there with Rocky. Why in the world... Again, I have to imagine the only comparison you tried to make was, oh, they both feature automobiles. I can make a comparison out of this. It's not accurate. There's nothing similar about these. Fast and the Furious barely deals with racing, and certainly not organized racing.
Ugh. George Thomas of the Akron Beacon Journal. Hack is quite sufficient. It's a stretch to find much joy to take from this story, which chronicles the decline of said Lightning McQueen. Like his redemption at the end of the movie, where he wants to help another racer instead of just helping himself?
Yeah, no,
Did you watch the movie, sir?
The downtrodden trainer who only ever wanted to be an actual athlete finally succeeding at the highest level in improbable fashion. No, there's no joy there.
God. All right. The rest of this is
I didn't even like the movie
thing.
All that much, and still I can acknowledge where the high points are supposed to be. What's the matter with you people? You have to be both emotionally dead and brain dead to arrive at some of these conclusions. I may be an emotional cripple, but at least I know where things are supposed to go.
All right, I'm going to read this one just to say, hey, this is the final one. But this again, are you fucking proud of this? Are you proud of this line, sir? Michael O'Sullivan of the Washington Post, top critic. Cars 3 feels like it may be time for a trade-in.
Really? Really? Okay, not only did you write this, all right, let's start here. Not only did you write that line, and I imagine you felt good about it because you didn't immediately go, oh, this is stupid, and delete it, like any functional person would. Then the editor, okay, now look, this isn't some moron writing for his own website. This is the Washington Post, right?
Yep.
Okay, there are professional editors. There are like levels of editors at a major publication like that. And somehow you all thought, heh, yeah, we'll do that. I mean, all of you, this is why your paper's going down the tubes. Because none of you have any sense of quality control. None of you looked at this and went, boy, that's a cheap pun. Maybe we don't want to be associated with cheap puns. Or bad lines, or people who don't know how to do their jobs. No, because we already hired all the people who failed to meet those qualifications, and we can't quite terminate their contracts yet. How in the world can you possibly say, I'm associated with this publication website of note, and someone will bring up, huh, so you went with this line, huh? I mean, what's your excuse going to be? I work the Metro desk?
Oh, that was fun. So next week,
time for a trade.
Speaking
in.
Of half,
somewhat ironically enough, wouldn't that hang on? Just bear with me for just 1 second, because we had some jackass earlier who wanted a better explanation of the world at large, right? So a trade in the world of cars. Is this how baby cars – I mean, is this just like slavery, right? Is this just, for want of a better phrase, human trafficking?
Are we really doing this?
No, I'm just – because this is now like in my head, it's time for – I mean, if you want to extend that line of logic, not only is this guy bad at his job, but within the context of the film universe, he's now supporting slavery.
So I have a theory. I have my own theory of what the Cars universe is. It's simply a child. Could be Boo. Could be Andy. Could be Molly. Could be any number of children. Could be Riley. That operate in the Pixar universe, in the real world. And it's this kid's imagination playing with cars. That's it. There's
the
no baby cars.
Me.
Yeah, it's just. That's all this is. They've never shown the kid because it isn't fucking necessary to the story. Andy was essential to Toy Story. Andy was God. And it was about dealing with the loss of God in your world. When you are forsaken by God, how do you handle that? That is Toy Story. So you need Andy. And showing him in his imagination playing with toys was essential to that story. His playing with those toys gave those toys meaning of life. Since Cars 3 in the first Cars is about a character, a particular character, one dealing with his selfishness, two dealing with his age, you don't need to know about the kid playing with the cars. It doesn't matter. It is functionally irrelevant to the story, and therefore you never see the kid. But that's all this is a kid playing with his cars. Including
look, we get to Cars 4 and we're getting Pull a Saint elsewhere.
Including when the kid threw the car into the television and broke the TV. You have crashed. You have crashed. Next week, Transformers, everybody. This is it. It's not getting any better than this summer, because we're not going to have a sissy slap fight over Despicable Me. We'll probably both reach the same conclusion regarding Spider-Man and Planet of the Apes. I'm sure Dunkirk will be fine. I'm you know, and we're not going to be yelling at each other about that. So this
we
is
might,
it, folks. It's the damn
look,
new Hollywood revolver.
If you and I had reviewed Inception, we'd have had a discussion to rival Age of Extinction. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think you can compare Inception to Dunkirk. Unless Dunkirk
same
ends
filmmaker.
With someone saying, he also made The Dark Knight. He also made The Dark Knight Rises, which was a completely different stylistic film than The Dark Knight, and it was garbage. Still, I still have so many issues with The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues to be had. A lot of good in it, too.
Destroy the city! It's yours! Why hasn't the army done anything? Well, we have a bomb running around. Oh, fuck. Fuck The Dark Knight Rises. And fuck Christopher Nolan. Anyway, hey, but The Dark Knight's wonderful. It's a fantastic film with no plot. Anyway, not to get off on a rant here. But, so for those of you who tune into this just to hear me and Robert viciously disagree over something, next week should be your show. Look, I'm building this up really big. If it turns out I hate The Last Knight too, I may not show up for the show. I may not be able to. It may be this year's Ghostbusters for me. I may be a broken man. You may have you and Jesse may have to review it because I may not emotionally be able to handle it if I hate this movie.
Mark,
I want to
love hate
it.
If you hate Transformers nearly as much as I do when it comes out, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm just assuming based on past evidence, if you feel about it the same way that I do, essentially, maybe degrees of intensity may vary, but if we both arrive at this is terrible, I insist that you come on, and I promise to be nice.
Okay. It'll just be my therapy session. I'll just cry into the microphone for an hour. Robert,
yeah,
it's so
about
bad.
Why have you forsaken me, Michael Bay?
We had such a good thing going. You only fucked up one of the movies, and
no,
you redeemed yourself in the third one.
Hang on. It needs to be said. Regardless of our disagreement about Age of Extinction. Even if we put that aside. All right, let's set that aside. He royally screwed up 2/3 of 3.
Okay.
The first 2/3 of Transformers 3 are unwatchable.
I don't think it was that bad, but there are parts that are unwatchable.
John
there
Malkovich shadow boxes with Bumblebee.
All right. Plugs. Tomorrow, this past Monday, we had the Poison Ivy, The Cycle of Life and Death on Source Material. Tomorrow night on the Metal Hammer of Doom, we'll be going live at 10 o'clock to accommodate one Robert Winfrey. And we'll be doing Nickelback.
What?
Nickelback.
Why would you bring me into that?
Nickelback! Well, I wouldn't give you a penny back!
Sorry, I meant Robert Cooper.
Okay.
Robert Cooper,
wait a minute. Did I sign up for this?
Robert, you're in the army now. Robert Cooper, Jesse Starcher, and
I would, if I did, I would have done it just to play devil's advocate. I freely acknowledge that as well.
We'll be reviewing Nickelback, Feed the Machine, tomorrow night on the Metal Hammer of Doom. No Thursday show this week. No on trial. No Because You Made Me. No TV party, no nothing, just taking the night off. I'll actually be recording a show that will go live on Monday, but that's hardly the issue here. In any case, no live show. This Friday, however, coming up, we've talked it to death, but if in case you've never gotten on the YouTube and heard our Age of Extinction discussion, we will rebroadcast it here on the Rattlegion Broadcasting Network for your amusement. So look for that this Friday. Damn You Hollywood Transformers Age of Extinction rebroadcast. And that's all I got this week. I don't want to get into, next week we're doing, as I said, on this show, we're reviewing Transformers. It's actually Transformers week all week long. I should probably talk about that. So Monday we'll be reviewing on Source Material IDW's Revolution, which was the mashup of Transformers, G.I. Joe, Mask, Rom the Space Knight, and the Micronauts. It was an interesting comic, to say the least. Oh, an Action Man, whoever the fuck he is. So we're going to go ahead and look at that. At the last night on this show, the Metal Hammer of Doom is chiming in with their part. We will be reviewing the Transformers animated motion picture soundtrack. Dare, better than all your dreams alive. Anyway.
And look, there's a Weird Al song in that, I seem to recall.
Yes, Dare to be Stupid. Fantastic. Fantastic song.
Yeah, the soundtrack, that is like the best Transformers property release ever, is that animated movie.
Yes, yes it is. Thursday, TV Party Tonight, Ronnie Adams will be coming. We're going to talk about the first season of Transformers Prime. And then on Friday, the Screaming Boy podcast will be doing all Transformers all the time and all of its various facets. So look for all of that. It's all Transformers all the time next week. 5 days of Transformers shows, plus an extra rebroadcasting of our Age of Extinction, our much ballyhooed Age of Extinction review. Okay, you got plugs. Go.
Yeah, I hate my life. Just a little bit. You can find my report for UFC Fight Night 112. It started at 2:45 in the morning my time. It was a Fight Pass exclusive from Singapore. And it was not a good event. The main
Hang
event
on.
Sucked.
Do your plug. Do your plugs and shut down the show. I'm going to go check my kid. One of my kids is crying. I got to go check on him. So, folks, we'll see you next week. I'm going to bug out. Go ahead and do your thing.
All right, Mark. I'll see you next week. We can yell at each other again. Again, so you can find that in the MMA Zone of 411 Mania. This Saturday, I will have live coverage of Bellator 180 / Bellator NYC. Yeah, it's stupid. Bellator 180 is the prelims. Bellator NYC is the pay-per-view card. I have no hope for this event outside of, like, one fight. I mean, maybe there's some value to watching Michael Chandler beat someone who's probably overmatched, but I am so disinterested in that card. And it features probably my favorite fighter, because Fedor's fighting. But, again, I can't support, like, Fedor actively fighting in 2017. Also, the main event for that card, Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing over there. So I'll cover that. I will weep quietly and stave off, you know, thoughts of doing horrible things to myself to alleviate the pain. Sunday evening, I will have live coverage of UFC Fight Night 1. I want to make sure I get this. The one I did Saturday was Fight Night 111. 112 is this coming Sunday. My apologies there. It's an event. The main event's awesome. Michael Chiesa versus Kevin Lee's a great fight. The rest of it, eh. Tim Boach and Johnny Hendricks, you pray it ends fast. BJ Penn's fighting Dennis Seaver at featherweight, because BJ Penn still fights. It's sad times all around. So stop by the MMA Zone at 411mania.com and say hi for those. Always appreciated. Mark and I will be back on next Tuesday at the same time on the same channel to review Transformers The Last Night. And I wonder, why, oh, why has Anthony Hopkins led me astray so many times? All right, until then, thank you again for listening, guys. Much love to all of you. I always appreciate you tuning in. For Mark, I'm Robert. Please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.